This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We've now got Gregory Phillips in the studio. Good morning to you, Gregory.
Hi, how are you?
Gregory is Associate Professor. He is CEO of an organisation called Abstar Consulting, does great work. Gregory is an Indigenous man. He's from Northwest Queensland, a medical anthropologist, and has studied in psychology. Have I got everything right, Gregory?
Yeah, it's about right.
And more recently, you were appointed to the Victorian Government's LGBTI Ministerial Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what are you going to bring to that committee? What are your personal objectives?
Well, look, firstly, it's an illustrious committee, and I'm very glad to be working with all of the great folk there, led by our fabulous chair, Brenda Appleton. I'm not here representing the task force. I'm just talking about my personal views, but we have a broad agenda and equality, obviously, for LGBTIQ people. My priorities, I think, in that work is we need to have an intersectional frame for the way that we plan public policy for all different parts of the community, because as an Aboriginal queer person, and again, I'm not representing Aboriginal Victorians because I'm not from here, but I do live here in this community. Well, when we plan government services, often those who are most marginalised miss out. So, for example, we don't have an Aboriginal statewide wellbeing and sexual health strategy, although there are some moves in that area from Department of Health and Human Services to start thinking about how to better plan services for Aboriginal queer Victorians. So there's some good moves along the way, but if we're not careful when we're planning public services, it's very easy to miss out different groups in society. So one of my priorities on the task force is to have an intersectional planning approach to public policy, so that different parts of the community don't miss out on appropriate education or housing or health services.
Correct. That's great stuff. So tell us a little bit about where you see the gaps might be. So you're saying that there's a gap in a plan. Are there real gaps in services?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how might those services be different, actually?
Well, so, for example, until about 3 years ago, the VAC, even though they do lots of good work in lots of areas, didn't have an agenda in Aboriginal health for Aboriginal peoples. And, you know, they had their reasons for that. There were other services in Victoria that were funded for Aboriginal sexual health services in particular, but there was a gap between what both of those different community organisations were able to offer or focus on. And so that's what I mean, part of my work is to try and help link up those services so that things don't fall through the cracks and that people do get looked after for the sorts of specificities they require.
Great. Well, welcome to Victoria then.
Well, I've been here 14 years, but thank you.
Right. I got that wrong. I suppose I've known you for a number of years, but I didn't realise how long you'd been here, so there you go. And also welcome to the Ministerial Task Force. I think you'll make a great contribution. Mm. So tell us a bit about where you're from. You're obviously from Northwest Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your heritage background.
So on my grandmother's side, I'm Wanyi, so that's a tribe just north of Mount Isa. So grew up in a mining town. Mount Isa is not Mount Eliza.
Mount Isa.
Mount Isa. 10 hours inland from Townsville. Largest city in the world, actually, in landmass. Mm. We have a very small town about 220 kilometres away from Mount Isa called Camelwheel. That Slim Dusty famously sang about, if anyone knows Slim Dusty. And Camwell is a suburb of Mount Isa, technically. So technically, we are the largest city in the world in landmass, and probably the smallest.
Really?
We are. And probably the smallest in mindset in some ways. we're represented by the good Bob Catter, who I'm proud to say my mum...
Oh, is there a good Bob Catter?
Well, you know, I'm kidding. Bob Catter... I wouldn't call him Bob Catter Senior. His dad, Bob Catter Senior, actually had lots of support by Aboriginal people in the in that area of town, because he was a Lebanese immigrant who did understand the needs of many communities. But his son, the one that wears the hat, clearly
is a current member of Parliament.
Is clearly the current member of Kennedy, and is not a chip off his old man's block at all. but I'm very proud to say about Bob Catter current that. He used to be bashed up by all the Aboriginal girls at school because he was a little shithead then, apparently. So there you go.
Wow.
So anyway, but Mount Isa...
That's a great little insight.
It is a great insight. Mount Isa is my grandmother's country, or north of Mount Isa. I grew up there. And grandfather's country is from the Kimberleys, so that's Jaru peoples. And he was a member of the Stolen Generations, and he... ended up in Queensland, ended up with my grandma, and that's where we stayed.
Hmm. So you did say that you're not here to represent Victorian people because you're not from Victoria. How important is that in terms of being able to bring an Indigenous voice to the table, to the conversation? Does where you come from really matter that much?
Absolutely. Well, someone in a work context the other day asked me where I was from, and I said Mount Isa or Queensland, and then, you know, towards the end of the meeting, she said, oh, so when are you going back to Queensland? I said, no, I live here. And she said, but you said you were from Mount Isa. And I said, yeah, well, I am. So where you're from has very different connotations in Aboriginal cultures than it does in non-Aboriginal cultures. So to us, where you're from is where you're culturally and socially connected and rooted. You may not live there, but that's where you're from. Whereas to non-Aboriginal people, where you're from is just where your current address is. Yeah.
There's an interesting sort of similar thing playing out in the Greek community.
That's right.
In fact, I was in Carlton North the other night going off to a pub. And we walked past, and there was this lovely old couple in their front garden, and I just knew they were Greek. And I asked them, and we started a conversation. Of course, my friends all with me all started to laugh at you know, this conversation. And my partner immediately knew where the conversation went, because I was asked where I was from. And when I told them where my father was from, because I was born in Footscray, of course, when I told them where my father was from, they got very excited, because they also came from the same region. So there was a sort of an identity connection, even though I'd never met these people before. It was very, very powerful.
Yes. Well, one of the hangovers of colonisation is that most white Australians today don't understand identity or where you're from. Many other cultures do, and it's not that there's anything deficit in non-Aboriginal Australians' view of the world. It's just that if you don't know where you're culturally and socially rooted and where your cultural and social identity comes from, then you're going to be at sea and adrift.
Right.
And therefore, you're going to be more scared of others. And basically, that sums up our national politic in a nutshell.
It's actually a really nice way to do it. So let's unpack that a bit more, and let's talk about that a bit more. We will be taking a break shortly, but let's begin by talking a bit about how do you see identity?
Well, it's complex. It's like the rainbow serpent, right? It's all colours, but it's in one. And it's all rooted in the earth. So if you believe in that. So one of the things...
But even if you don't, though, I mean, it's that's a symbol, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
It's a metaphor for having a conversation about where all things come from.
Look, human beings, I think it's human nature. It's just that some cultures have remembered it and some have forgotten it, actually. So the human experience is that, you know, for example, our lesbian sisters can't choose between being homosexual or a woman.
Mm.
They just are.
They're both.
Right, they're both. Of course they are. I can't choose between being Aboriginal or being gay. I'm just both, or a man. I mean, all of those three things make up my identity, along with what I do for work and along with what I wear and along with, you know, who my friends are and blah, blah, blah. So one of the limitations, I think, of Western intellectual thought is that we have to be binary in our thinking. You know, yes or no, black or white, right or wrong, guilty or not guilty.
It's too harsh. It's too limited way to view things.
It's just not how we rainbow folks roll.
Macca, we're speaking with Gregory Phillips, who's an Aboriginal man, is talking about his experience. We're talking about identity and so forth. But we've had some really good questions there, Macca. A great question from 317. Would you like to just read that out and maybe check with Greg?
Okay. Gregory? Has rural Australia grown up?
Well, it's a big question. I think in some areas, yes, it has. And, well, first of all, the presumption of that question is that city people are all grown up.
Yeah,
and,
you got that wrong.
So King Street on a Friday night's not really conducive to that. So, secondly, rural Australia, there are some parts of it, of course, that have. There are other parts that still, you know, rely on a 1950s view of the world, and there are still lots of those people in the city, mind you. So I just think it's a mixed bag. If the question is, has rural Australia grown up on queer issues? Again, in some parts of the country, yes, absolutely, and in others, still lagging far behind.
We've been having, during the discussion, Gregory, during the show today, a big discussion around, and I use the term Australia Day. We've had many varying views, and you know, both Tass and I have an opinion which is not that far apart.
It's not.
I'd like this public holiday to be something we can all be proud of, that recognises our history, acknowledges our history, recognises
where we're from,
where we are now, where we'd like to be, and what Australia is. The whole discussion about changing the date, you know, our belief is you can't just change the date, you've actually got to change the way people think about what this day is. I'd like you to give us your view.
Yeah, I think one of the best signs I saw yesterday said change the system, and homos against nationalism. So there you go.
I saw that.
They were great.
In fact, I saw that on your Facebook page.
That's right. Look, changing the date, yes, we should, but if that's all we do, then we're mistaken. Because, I mean, if we change the date to, you know, some other random day, what, are we just going to expect Aboriginal people to still turn up and barbecues and be all happy or whatever? Like, hello.
But it's become symbolic, though, hasn't it?
It's symbolic for
bigger change than that.
What it's good for is that it's increased the public debate, right, around the truth of our history. The real issue is that we still have to have a Truth and Justice Commission that fully fleshes out what happened during genocide and colonisation in Australia, and how does that still impact on our national sense of identity now. Now, the reason we need to do that is not because, you know, Aboriginal people want to hark on about the past forever, or because we're offended by celebrating invasion. I mean, they're part of the reason. But it's kind of like saying, should Germans celebrate the Holocaust because Jews are offended, or stop celebrating the Holocaust because Jews are offended. Well, yeah, probably. But they shouldn't just do it because Jews are offended. It's not just about the feelings. It's about because it's still affecting German society. Mm. Hello. So in the same way here in Australia, we shouldn't be thinking about these things just because, you know, because the implication is that we Aboriginal people are just wrapping ourselves in cotton wool and we're all sort of, you know, petals who are overly offended easily. But the reality is it just affects all of us. So, yes, we should change the date, but we should have a much broader conversation about the realities of our history and how it impacts us as society today.
So the sorts of things that we've talked about this morning include having a treaty with our First Nations people, changing our constitution so that it actually acknowledges where we've come from and who our First Nations people are, and that they are part of our nation. We've also talked about our head of state and what that means. So all of those things are part of the things that actually help us to really clarify who we are as people, as a nation, and where we're going.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about this commission idea.
Well, look, the way I describe it is constitutional recognition, if that's all we do, and if it's just a nice sort of flowery acknowledgement in the constitution that Aboriginal people were here first, if that's all we do, then it's really like the crumbs of the white man's table. You know, it's kind of like white people still are in power, we still own the parliament, and we're just going to include you Aborigines in our parliament.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? Sort of, it's quite condescending, really. Treaty is stronger, so treaty is a seat for Aboriginal people at the table, at a shared table. But I think the real opportunity in Australia is the Republic, because I don't want the Republic to be simply about recolonisation of Aboriginal people. I want the Republic to be the crowning step of a nation that has firstly had a Truth and Justice Commission, secondly, reconsidered what its national values ought to be and had that conversation amongst all of us. What does mateship really mean and for who, for example? What does community mean? What does rainbow mean? What does, gender mean? What is our place in the world? Are we going to relate to America or China or England, or who are we? So we need to have that conversation about our national values and identity. Second, then we can have a more constructive conversation about what the body politic should look like, what the parliament should look like, what the constitution should look like, how do we include a Bill of Rights, etc. Then we can become a republic. So it's a little bit premature for us to have conversations now about the symbols of the republic, the flag or the date or the this or the that, without us doing the hard work. So I think we should do a bit of all of that, but we need to be very clear about the order and the motivation for when we do these things.
And in fact, what I think you're saying is that all of those pieces need to be done. Perhaps you could do some of those concurrently.
But
more importantly, there needs to be a process whereby we can listen to, hear and document the experiences of Indigenous people in this country.
Yes, I don't think Truth and Justice and, you know, genocide and national healing for Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people, I don't think they're issues that are a part of the Republican debate. I think they're actually the reason for the Republican debate. If we don't get those things correct, then two risks we run. One, we will not know how to deal with climate change properly and sustainably, and that affects us all. And secondly, we will still not know our place in the family of nations. And if we don't know those things, we will be a nation of adrift for another 200 years. So the reason that we should invest in Aboriginal youth learning language and knowledge, for example, is not out of charity or benevolence or some white notion of helping Aboriginal people. It's because if we don't do that, then this nation will not know how to understand, you know, we will not understand how to deal with preventing the next Black Saturday.
Yes.
The elders on the Murray River have been trying to tell water commissions in New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia and Canberra for decades about how to manage water flow in the Murray-Darling Basin, and they simply believe that Western science is superior, and so therefore what would the elders know? And
meanwhile,
the more we do that,
we have a problem.
The more we do that, Yeah, right.
The more
just marginalising the elders.
The more problem we have.
So, you know, snap out of it, people.
You've put a proposal. There's an idea for head of, you know, let's jump forward that we've had these discussions so we can actually become a republic because we understand who we are and all that's packed up in that.
Mm.
That the head of state should be an Australian,
mm-hmm.
and that would alternate between, for each term, a fixed term,
mm.
between an Indigenous person
mm.
and a non-Indigenous person.
Yes.
And I'm going to throw a fly in the ointment here.
Mm.
I'm assuming in that when the time comes to elect a non-Indigenous person or an Indigenous person,
mm.
that for the non-Indigenous person, that an Indigenous person could not stand or could not be a candidate? Or would you... or because otherwise, how would you... If you say every second president was going to be an Indigenous person,
mm.
that would mean that for that election, that a non-Indigenous person obviously couldn't stand. So what do you do in the situation, in either case, Indigenous mm. or non-Indigenous,
mm.
where the candidates are nuff-nuffs,
mm.
where they're idiots? What do you do there?
But,
I mean, where you end? Okay, I mean, it's not like all our politicians are, you know, are IQs of 180. But what do you how would you deal with that?
Well, so let me pre-qualify these comments okay. that, you know, again, talking about the symbols and the detail of
mm.
a republic 10 years down the track is a little bit silly until we really understand who we are as a nation. However, in that case, I mean, that's up to a constitutional convention of all of us to negotiate. But, I mean, the way I would see that working is that it's just that every second, because of the weight of the numbers, right, 97% to 3% Aboriginal people,
of course, yeah.
In, let's say, the general election, when it was open for a non-Indigenous person or anybody to stand, I wouldn't see a problem with Aboriginal people still being able to stand in that election. I mean, that's open to everybody, to whoever gets elected. But the reason for having a specific allocation for an Aboriginal president every second term or Torres Strait Islander person every second term is because if you don't do that, then you'll never get an Aboriginal person
okay,
elected,
correct.
Right?
Okay.
Or appointed. And really, I'm seeing this as a co-ownership thing, that it's mm-hmm. not that Aboriginal people have ever wanted to say, you know, let's kick all the non-Aboriginal mob out. That's not how yeah. our elders roll. But we do want to... I mean, until we're talking about sharing power and resources...
Of course.
It's all fluff.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's figure out yeah. how to do that and yeah. negotiate yeah. it.
Clearly, in the next 12, 24 months, we'll be having many, many more conversations mm. about self-identity, identity and self-determination mm. and republic movement.
Mm.
I'd like you to be a part of that conversation mm, if you're
absolutely.
Interested.
Sure.
Just to bring it back to sort of home again,
mm.
what did you do yesterday on Australia Day?
Went to the rally. My mum and my sister and brother-in-law are down at the moment visiting, so it was lovely. We went to the rally together. There was a big mob of us. And we went to the Share the Spirit Festival afterwards, which
fantastic.
Is in Treasury Gardens. Dan Sultan and Archie Roach and some hip-hop artists and comedians and all sorts of people were performing. It was, yeah, cool. a lovely day under the trees.
Great, mm. great. And I've just, I need to tell you about this comment. Catherine from St Kilda says, Gregory Phillips for PM, but there I think she go. Means president.
President.
Well, that's very lovely. I think that's probably my friend Catherine, so I'll have to buy her a coffee afterwards for saying that. But anyway, yeah, we'll see.
Gregory, thank you very much for your time this
it's
morning.
It's been a real
it's
pleasure.
Been
and
great to have yeah. this conversation.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Look forward to more.
And want you to be part of the future ones on this station.
Love
on
to.
This issue.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.